Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation. Leave a comment and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
What are the skills that a talent acquisition professional should have? What are the facts about hiring, which most companies are unaware of? To find answers to these questions, we interacted with Katrina Collier on this episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Katrina is a facilitator in recruitment and candidate experience at The Searchologist, the author of The Robot Proof Recruiter, a well-loved global keynote speaker, and the host of the Hiring Partner Perspective podcast. On this episode, Katrina talks about her mission to energize the human connection between HR, recruiters, and hiring managers to improve the recruitment and candidate experience. Welcome to the Shape of Work podcast, Katrina. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to have me here. Thank you.
Perfect. So before we get into some of the themes and questions that I have, you know, thought of taking your perspectives on, why don't you tell us, our listeners, something about yourself? You know, maybe tell us about your career path till now, your journey in the world of HR.
Well, like most recruiters, I fell into the industry. I only know a couple who've ever chosen to be recruiters, which is dreadful because what we do is so important. I entered the industry in 2003 when I moved to London, which I have as my beautiful backdrop here for those watching the video. And I saw this little advertisement, you know, recruitment industry. I'm like, what is this? No idea. I can do that. Let's try that. And it started me on an incredible career path. So I spent, after a bit of a wobbly start, because few agencies were a bit dodgy, ended up at one for 5 years, agency world. And then I went and decided to teach this social media recruitment malarkey in 2008-09, because the beautiful crash of the world gave me the opportunity to do that. And I was a bit early. Sometimes I still feel like I'm a bit early. And I then went in-house for about 18 months, which taught me so much about how different it is to work in in-house recruitment to agency recruitment, but how they're both really important. And then I came out and started training, and I spent quite several years training on how to recruit on social media from 2012 until around 2018, something like that, when I had the incredible honor of being asked by Kogan Page if I would like to write a book, which is this one, which maybe, when I've got my backdrop on, you can never see it. But The Robot Proof Recruiter. I never seemed to get that to work. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
So I got asked to write The Robot Proof Recruiter, which is, it was when they asked me, would I like to write a book? It was really obvious what I was going to write. It was like, no, HR technology cannot do our job. Let me tell you why. So that's what it's all about. I, of course, love technology, but it's about how to use it to support the human first experience through recruitment. So I did that, and then I sort of pivoted because it was like, okay, I don't want to train anymore. I'm bored of doing that. I don't want to do it. And there's a lot of people out there who are training who are very good, so I don't feel bad. Like we were saying, Mike Cohen, he does a lot of training. So I then thought, what do I want to do? And I came into 2020 on this mission after the book came out in August 2019. Mm-hmm. I want to get the hiring managers to start treating people better. This is this idea I came in with. And I had a plan, like everybody did when they came into 2020, and the pandemic kind of pushed that aside. So I was like, okay, time to pivot, because I lost all of my income in March 2020. It was like, oh my goodness. Rather frustrated. Yeah, but, you know, I wasn't alone. I thought, okay, what do I want to do? So I brought the book to life. So I created the mastermind that goes with the book, which is all about amping up the human skills of recruiters. Because there's so much focus on technology and data and not enough on the human side. And the human side is the thing that creates the great partnerships within companies between the hiring managers, HR, and recruiters. That whether they're outside or inside recruiters doesn't matter. But that's the thing that I think needs the focus. So the mastermind does that. And I have also started facilitating and doing a lot of work with hiring managers. And the idea with that is to get them to see what they need to be better at recruitment. So It was horrible to come into 2020 and my plan go out the window, but actually I've ended up doing what I really want to be doing, and that is just fixing this problem, like really getting to the bottom of what's the problem with candidate experience and how can we fix it? Because I believe if we can get the HR, hiring manager, recruitment partnerships right, then the people will be treated right anyway. So that's what I'm up to. Long path of like 17 years to get here, but I love it.
Sounds great.
Or everyone sounds... in the first 5 minutes of the podcast with that explanation.
Not at all. Not at all. That's a fantastic career path and journey. Mm-hmm. And things have a weird way of, you know, you would have never thought you would be doing this 1.5 years ago. And now you're doing something which you say you are very passionate about and is something that you wanted to do for a very, very long time.
Well, I spend a lot of time speaking on stages. So, I mean, that's how I know. You mentioned that you interviewed Mike, Batman Recruiter. And of course, I've met him at a conference. You know, I've spoken around the world. And it was like, well, that's sort of stopping. And then the events I ran was stopping. And it was like, okay, time to refocus on what do you really want to do? Because I was sort of, once the book was published, as proud as I am of it, and the 74 people who helped me write it, by the way, I didn't write it on my own.
Oh, wow.
No, I pulled in a lot of people to help me write this. So grateful to all of them. But it was like, I don't know what I want to do. I was a bit like, I needed to shift. I didn't want to stay doing what I was doing. I always felt like we need to fix what's going on. We've put too much technology and process in the way of the person getting to the job. Okay. I just want to fix it.
Yeah. In many ways, and, you know, now that we are mentioning Mike here, in many ways, this podcast will then be sort of complementary to what we discussed with Mike, because he was very much focused on the, you know, the technology and data side of sourcing specifically.
It has its place, but then he's a great human. You see, he's
definitely.
He's an older recruiter. So he's been around before technology got in the way, whereas some of the younger generation coming through, they only know technology being in the way. They don't necessarily understand how to woo someone. So it's like they'll send you a message and they just expect you to reply. And it's like, but you're going, because you've got skills that are in demand, so you don't have to reply. And you're like looking at them, you're looking at the company, and you're like, oh, I don't want to talk to them. Whereas Mike would know how to get somebody to on the hook, if you will, to woo them through the process because he's been around a bit. And I know that sounds dreadful, but
no, even with the 45-minute conversation that I had with him, I can attest to, you know, the human side of things, you know, the humor and such.
Yeah, if I put him in my book, did he make it in? I better check. It goes to the index. I'm not sure I did. He might be in the next one. Oh, bless him, I didn't. I'll have to put him in the next one.
Great. I think you've already, you know, touched upon this in the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And this was going to be the first question, you know, which tell us something about recruiting that most hiring managers don't know or are consistently wrong about. And I feel like you've already touched upon it, but if you want to.
I think that hiring managers think that CVs or resumes, depending on what country you live in, just land in our laps, just like poof. And truly, if you ask them, they think that we just advertise and that people are just there. They don't understand the process. Now, I have mostly done work, and I'm really honest about this in the beginning of the Robot Proof Recruiter, because I haven't done high volume recruitment. I've only ever done recruitment where people have skills that are in demand. So that's technology, healthcare, for example. So these people have the choice of the marketplace. They do not need to talk to you as a recruiter. So a recruiter's job is really complicated. They've got to go out, like Mike would have been talking about, go out and source and find people and get them their attention and woo them through the process. Whereas the hiring managers just think they appear. And therefore they feel that they can treat them quite poorly, and that's okay. They feel that they can just, you know, grill them like, you know, you used to in the 90s, but you can't, because the biggest game changer to recruitment was the internet. Okay. All the tools and technology that's come since then are all on the back of the internet.
Okay.
The internet was the thing where, I mean, I remember it happening. So I mean, obviously the internet was around before I went into recruitment, but in 2003, 2004, 2005, it was there.
Yeah.
But in an agency, I still had my black book contacts. And yes, I'd put a job advert out on the internet, but you really, again, I had my contacts and the company couldn't get to them. But when the 2008-09 crash happened, all the people appeared online. And the internet started evolving and LinkedIn exploded and Facebook exploded. And suddenly it was like, oh, the company can get direct access to the people. Because what's then happened over the 10, 12, 13 years since, yeah. My gosh, getting on, is that it's evolved. So that people who have skills that are in demand are quite comfortable using the internet. They say, Katrina's got in touch, or the company's got in touch, or they're looking at this company. They get Googling and they start looking at that company. Like, I don't want to talk to you. I can see your reviews. I've looked at recruiting hell on Reddit. Gosh, look what people are saying about you. I don't like what you're sharing. They don't have to talk to you. So it's become very, very different. But the internet was that big game changer. And then since then, obviously, it's followed on. Yeah. So I completely lost my thread. Oh, yeah, the hiring managers. The hiring managers don't know that. They don't understand they're being looked at. Mm. And it's really interesting. From my own podcast, I interviewed Suze Santos from Nestle. Oh. And she actually does realize that people are looking at her. And she actually deliberately puts posts that are saying, like, if you're going to come and interview with me, don't worry. Like, I'd be nervous too. I am nervous. I want to make sure that you're showing yourself in the best light. I want to see the best about you. And she was so empathetic. It was lovely. Yeah. And we need more of that. But that's, yeah, a couple of things. So the hiring managers think that CVs just appear and they don't realize they're being looked at, that they too are under review, that their behavior is under review. Different worlds in a very short period of time.
Most definitely. Especially, you know, the talent, the in-demand talent, they are definitely looking at you even before, you know, talking to you.
Yeah, pandemic or not, there were 5 job vacancies for every developer here in London. There probably still is, pandemic or not. You know, it's like they don't have to work for you. They don't have to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, every other role, almost every other role, at least that's the case in India, you are asked, you know, why have you been job hopping? I see that you have changed 5 companies in the past 3 years. But if it's a developer or a tech talent, they're like, you know, not even looking at, you know, okay, this person might have shifted in the past 6 months or so. As long as they're coming to my organization, you're perfectly fine with it.
Yeah.
So it's totally, you know, dependent on the kind of talent you're looking for. And of course,
totally.
But I was going through your LinkedIn and I saw that you consistently, you know, you consistently talk about this imbalance in the relationship. And, you know, you've already touched upon that between HR recruiters and hiring managers, and which is the major factor affecting talent acquisition.
Mm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I mean, ask any head of director of talent acquisition, they will tell you horror stories about like being blocked from doing things. So I think it's like the last 4 or 5 people I've spoken to are heads of TA have a real issue with their HR department. So like even playing games, politics, ghosting, you know, just stuff like that. And you've got like the people who bring in the people trying to work with the people who develop the people, and for some reason they're clashing. And it all just comes down to communication. It all comes down to, like, we need to work out what is your role and what's my role, and we're not stepping on each other's toes, and, you know, we're here for the greater good of the company, and somewhere that's got forgotten amongst the internal politics. And then you see it happening with the hiring managers as well. So perhaps so I've run facilitation with the company, and it came out that they're given a salary band. You know, it might be 40 to 45,000, but they're only allowed to offer 42.5. Even though they're given the salary band, because somebody in HR decided. Or you get the situation where, well, HR has this bit of technology, so the recruiters have to use this bit of technology. Or someone decided we're not going to give feedback, so we don't give feedback. Who cares about the candidate experience? And it's always someone between the three. I do appreciate the examples I just gave seem to be blaming HR, but all three, in my opinion, are responsible for the breakdown in communication. It's often a lot of fear. So it could be fear of I'm out of my depth and I'm pretending what I'm doing. That can be hiring managers, first-time interviewers. But that's where HR should be finding that out. And what support do they need? You know, that kind of a thing. And that's where TA could feed that to HR and say, hey, I've got this hiring manager who I think needs some support, and then work together to make it all better. But there are countless, countless examples. I mean, you could blame other departments as well. Sometimes IT is completely responsible for creating hell for candidates to apply for a job. So but in my experience, it's the three, it's that triangle. There's always this discussion about where talent acquisition should fall. And I feel as it's growing and it's evolving, it should be outside HR, plugging into HR, into the hiring managers, into marketing, into sales, and being a lot more like proactive. Yeah. Rather than reactive. But we'll see. It's in a way, it's so new because with the explosion of the internet was really when those functions really started growing, the in-house recruitment functions. So in a way, that's really new, and it will evolve and get better. But I'm just on a mission because the facilitation I do is just like an hour and a half process, and within it, it uncovers what the issues are. And it sounds crazy, but because it's like online, it's anonymous, people will be much more truthful than they will be in a survey or a focus group. They'll be much more vulnerable. And then they democratically, because it's like a design thinking process, they democratically vote on what's the biggest problem. And actually, let's brainstorm some ideas on how to fix it. So you can really quickly get to really what we need to just make it better. Because fundamentally, we should all, whether it's HR or talent acquisition or outside recruiters even, but bringing in the best people for that company, because it's the people that make the company succeed. And for some reason, we seem to think it's the finance department or the sales department or the technology. No, it's not. It's the people. It's always the people. So that's why 100%. I'm on this mission. Fix it. I want to fix it.
Yeah.
Bend it back into shape.
No, that totally makes sense. But what sort of skills, focusing on the talent acquisition professionals, what sort of skills should they develop to ensure that, you know, it's easier for them to partner with these hiring managers and also to engage with candidates?
Yeah.
And how do they go about developing them?
Well, they join my mastermind, obviously. Serious question. But yeah. I know, it's really weird. It's like the skills that get brushed under the carpet, they're the most important. And I feel also when we've been working remotely for so long as well, they've almost dropped away even more because we've got even more excuse to not engage with people. We can just pull back and pull back as we're constantly on video chats. But when I was writing The Robot Proof Recruiter and I got to chapter 5, which is all about the intake strategy session, so that's all about that hour you spend with the hiring manager really trying to get underneath the skin of what they want and to the real nitty-gritty and what this person's going to come in and fix and all this sort of stuff. And I have to say, crowdsource that chapter. I couldn't have done it without Maisha Cannon, Tanji Pedersen, Steve Levy, so they have to get a shout-out. They absolutely helped me with that. But it was, if you can't build trust, if you're not fearless to stand up and set boundaries, if you're not curious, like to dig in and ask more questions, if you don't have empathy and compassion, so you can't put yourselves in the shoes of the hiring manager. So what happens if we bring in the wrong person? What will happen if we bring in the right person? Like, what's the role going to be like? What's it going to be like working with you? What do you really need? Like all of that side. If you don't create the certainty and the clarity, so that's the, we need to know what the process is for the recruitment. And even though this is an uncertain time, we still have to make it feel like there's some certainty there for the candidate. So what's the process that you're going to give them, right? If I send you CVs, when are you going to come back to me? And all this sort of stuff. But they're all very human. Now, the technology is great. If you want to use technology to schedule your interviews and all that sort of stuff, knock yourself out. If you want to diarize to remind yourself to go get that feedback, great. But you've really got to make the difference in that 1 hour, that initial time. And so often the human hiring manager comes into the process with, yeah, I don't really like recruiters. I don't like recruiting. I don't like interviewing. I don't like the whole process. I mean, come on, it's stressful. so stressful. My Spaniel has just decided he wants to join me. he's like, she's getting excited. But it's, they don't necessarily have the skills or a good experience to bring to the process. So that poor recruiter has to get to the bottom of that as well. It's also like, you know, do you trust me? because they've got to trust them to bring the right person to the team. And so often they don't trust their recruiters. So that's like when I actually do the mastermind, I focus on 12 skills over 12 months and I start with trust because to me it's the most important. But I also do ones like self-worth because I feel that recruiters are stuck in the middle being bashed by the hiring manager and bashed by the candidates for not doing a good enough job. And there's the vast majority are doing an amazing job out there. But of course, it's the few that make it really bad or crazy processes like no feedback that just don't help because, you know, somebody in the policy department decided that was the best way forward rather than thinking of having some empathy and compassion for the poor human being in the recruitment process. So, yeah, it's those skills. As far as developing them, well, obviously, yes. Self-plug, I have this amazing mastermind program, which is so cool. But what we do is I get them to feel it. I know that sounds crazy, but it's like we've forgotten how to feel stuff. Mm. You know, someone applies for a role and you reject them with this cold message. You're forgetting about the hopes and the dreams and the aspirations of that person. Really? You spent an hour applying for that role. And it's like, okay, guys, I want you to go and put yourself in the shoes of a job seeker. I want you to remember what it feels like. Go have a look at trying to apply. What results do you get? What does it feel like? And I feel like if you can feel it in your body, then you start going, oh, gosh, no, I don't want to treat people like that. And the way I do it is like we have an hour together and then I set weekly challenges. So the idea is they get the reminder all the way through the month. So hopefully by the end of the month, they're like, ah, right, got to make sure I'm trustworthy. I've got empathy and compassion. I'm being fearless, all this sort of stuff. And I have a lot of fun with it as well because I think training can be fun. I don't know of anything else out there specific for recruiters in that space. There's lots of stuff. There's lots of sales training and marketing training and sourcing training, but the human, less convinced. We need more of it. There's not enough of it. As far as I'm aware, happy to be corrected.
No, I would definitely agree with that. There is a serious lack of empathy, and this is, I am coming from a different viewpoint of being a marketer and, of course, you know, working closely with product teams. And this is certainly a problem even there, right? People build products in isolation. They're not really talking to their potential customers, potential users.
Yep.
And then you just don't build that. Like you said, if you're not in their shoes, you're not going to be able to build a product that they would like to use.
Exactly.
And
There's when you see a path, actually there's a couple near me where someone has built it and they expect people to like go up and turn a sharp 90 degree corner. So of course everyone just cuts the triangle corner because we're all fundamentally lazy. And I just love it. So there's this beautiful concrete path and then there's the mud where everyone's cut across the grass. And it's exactly what you're talking about, isn't it? Like someone in product design goes, well, it'll look really pretty if it's like that, but never mind the user who's like just going, but I'm going this way. And I think it is so important to get back to the basics.
Yeah.
And just we've overcomplicated it. It really did used to be when I started out, I'd look in my database or I'd put an advert out, I'd see you, I'd call you, you'd answer your phone, which was giving me permission to speak. We'd have a conversation about, are you on the job market or not? This is the role, this is blah, 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 blah. And off we'd go. Now it's like, let me get you to jump through 16 hurdles to do the same thing, to eventually not ever speak to you. It's like, no. No, it doesn't work like that. These are humans. They've got feelings and emotions. We're complicated beings. Mm. So, yeah, more empathy and compassion. Actually, wouldn't the world be amazing with just a little bit more kindness?
Definitely, definitely. Mm. What other sort of factors would you say comprise this candidate experience?
What other factors do what, sorry?
When you talk about, you know, candidate experience in the world of recruitment, of course, you know, we have already touched upon some of the things, but what other sort of factors are part of, you know, an improved candidate experience?
Feedback. I always go back to feedback. It's like, oh, if you do a Google search, you can actually do what's called a Google X-ray search where you can search the particular pages on a website. So if you search the interview pages on just Glassdoor, for example, for never heard back, there are far, far, far too many people who've been through an interview and never heard back. So, I mean, that to me is just fundamentally, you know, the basics. But there's a lot of measurement of it. And I'm just not sure there's enough fixing of it because it's quite complicated. And what makes me have a great candidate experience isn't necessarily what makes you have a great candidate experience, because we all have a different level, different expectation level. However, there are just fundamentals in place, aren't there? You know, when I apply for the role, I get something nice back. You know, that's where the technology can come in, where you can send me a rich media SMS showing some excitement for having read my CV, suggest giving me your name rather than just the talent acquisition team. For the podcast, I pulled a face to watch the video. I'm very entertaining with my facial expressions. You know, you can actually send them off to some job search tips. You can show them behind the scenes. Yeah. You know, you can add value. And then all the way through the process, keep letting people, there's technology available to do this. Let people know where they are. Stop the black hole. You know, everyone thinks like, oh, I've just applied to a black hole. But then it's, you know, once you really are talking to people, I believe, contrary to some global companies who have policies in place for no feedback, I believe everybody deserves to have some form of closure.
Yeah.
It's human nature to want closure. You know, that's why ghosting, whether it's by a recruiter or personally in a relationship, is so traumatic for people, because we need closure. So it's, you know, it, that comes into it as well. But it's more than that. It's looking at everywhere there's a handoff. You know, the candidate goes from, you know, their initial application, so through the technology, makes it to the recruiter. Then they get through the interview process, right? Who's taking them through the pre-boarding and the onboarding? What's their first 6 months like? It's like quite a long period of time. And in the middle of that, they're telling people how they're being treated. And that's stopping you from getting referrals and potentially losing your business. Because, you know, if you're business to consumer and you treat someone badly, you could be missing out on that. So it is complicated. So I still bring it back all the time. To me, it comes back to that, those three people really understanding what they're there to do as far as recruitment. And I feel if you start fixing that, because if all of those are partnering together properly, they're all on the understanding, this is my role, this is your role, together we're bringing these people in, you can start having much more open conversations about, look, HR, I understand you want to use that bit of technology, but our recruitment tech doesn't plug in and this is why we need this tech. And suddenly you're like, well, let's find a solution and fix it. You know, rather than, well, that's too bad, you have to have that tech, but that tech delivers a bad candidate experience. Well, too bad. You know, and these conversations happen. Yeah. I've had a recruiter crying because they rolled out some technology without talking to the in-house recruitment team. And she had to click so many more times that she was in pain. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it does, you know, the repetition, RSI, whatever it's called. But she was in tears. She just said, this is crazy. And not only that, it wasn't working. So if someone applied on LinkedIn, they weren't actually getting through, on an iPad, for example, or on a tablet, they weren't actually getting through the process. They were just getting lost in the ether. So it's like, everyone needs to talk and communicate and have this place at the table about recruitment.
Yeah.
Light rant. I can feel like I'm on my soapbox. It's complicated. And I just feel like we're measuring it a lot and we're talking about it a lot, but are we really getting to the root cause? And I still think the root cause is humans.
No.
We're all perfectly imperfect.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll have to agree there. You know, technology can only do so much. And, you know, some of the things that humans should not be doing, that's what technology is there for.
Yeah.
Humans should
be. Entries.
Yeah.
Reminding you to call someone.
Yeah, I mean, humans should very much be focused on the creative part of it. And of course, you know, the human to human communication and all of that.
Yeah.
And while on the topic of communication, you know, of course, with virtual and remote now, now that you're not meeting people in an office setting, not interviewing people in an office setting.
Yeah.
Of course, it came with some challenges, but I think. but I think most of the companies have now figured out a process for themselves. While it might not be the perfect process, a perfect replacement for what they were doing before the pandemic, there is some process to it.
Okay. Hopes. I've seen some horror stories out there.
Okay.
I think it's there are still hiring managers, and again, this goes back to communication and partnership, who feel that they can do things like not have their camera on, and the candidates have to have their camera on. Well, what are you going to do, sit in an actual interview room with a paper bag on your head? No. So why are you doing that on a video? And I've seen these Glassdoor reviews. They're shocking. I think it's just that people forget as well. It's like you're not getting met at reception. So you think in an in-person interview, I come and I greet you at reception. I ask you how your trip was there. I sort of, you know, oh, this is our office as we walk to the interview room. Would you like a coffee or a glass of water or whatever? And I set you up so that when you sit down and you're about to start the interview, you're feeling a little bit relaxed in this not relaxing situation. And it's the same on video. But a lot of hiring managers just straight in instead of going, hey, are you set up okay? Is your Wi-Fi okay? Are there any distractions? Are you expecting a delivery? If you get delivery, it's okay. Don't worry. We'll just stop and, you know, go get it, because we never know when they're going to turn up, and you can guarantee it's in the middle of an interview. And it's that sort of a stuff. You know, are your kids okay? Are they likely to come on screen? And it's just relaxing people. And I still feel, even though we're 14 months into this, that some hiring managers have forgotten and they're just being very tough about what we're all going through, which is we're not really working from home. You know, I'm set up to work from home. I've been working from home for 11 years. It's my business. Of course I am. But most people aren't, you know, they're not set up for it properly. They're just trying the best they can while there's so much distraction going on around them. So, and I just think it's a case of remembering that. But there's also simple things that we can do. We have one of the mastermind pods is on power listening. And my coach, Roderick Lambert, helps me with this one. And he's like, sit back. Now, I can't sit back currently because obviously the microphone, but normally if you sit back, you can see more of someone's body.
Yeah.
And usually people mirror you. So if you sit back, they'll sit back. And then when you can see more of that, it's less exhausting as well, because so much of our communication is nonverbal. So you can sort of, it's easier to interview. And it's just all those sorts of little things. But it's a work in progress. And some people are just genuinely so uncomfortable on video, even after all this time. They just don't like it.
Agreed. Yeah. In fact, Mike had a very interesting take on it.
Yeah.
His take was, you know, why do we even do video interviews?
He just wants audio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take video out of the equation totally. And for me, I sort of saw the point, because we are the kind of company that we are. We have mostly video off meetings.
Yeah.
If at all, we have meetings over Zoom or Google Meet, whatever that is, because we sort of try to keep things asynchronous. Mostly, you know, written communication over doing this on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the people that I've hired who I've never met in person in the past 14 months, I have had a grand total of 5 conversations over video when, you know, video has been on.
Right.
And to me, it was very interesting that I'm trying to figure out this person's nonverbal cues and such over video. Yeah. But when I'm going to work with them, and all the video calls that I've had are have been informal conversations, more like, you know, Friday fun meetings, those sort of things. And so it was an interesting take. I mean, I wouldn't say it's right or wrong.
Look, I think that goes back to Mike having been around a while as well. You know, we used to use the phone. We call people. So, you know, all of my initial screens in my agency days, all of them for the entire 5+ years were all on a phone call.
Yeah.
So you would be picking up the tone of their voice. Were they excited about it, the opportunity, or were they just playing you? Because you can really hear that in someone's tone. Mm-hmm. And maybe he finds it less distracting.
Yeah.
Maybe he's high on the auditory and not so visual.
Could be.
Some people are just, they're so visual that they need to see someone to read them. I could quite happily just do phone. But it's interesting, when I do my own podcast, I use Zencastr rather than Zoom when I do the hiring partner perspective. And you can now see each other. And it's quite nice because I can give encouragement and be nodding and smiling like you're doing. So someone feels like they can keep talking. Yeah. So I guess it's good and bad, isn't it? And I think this is the other thing when you think about candidate experiences, we just all are so different.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard for recruiters now because there are so many different ways that you can be communicated with and you need to keep track of it. But, you know, we want to, as a default, go to email. And most people just want a text or a WhatsApp. And we're going to this email thing. And like half my emails go in someone's spam as well. I'm like, I send it and I never know if they're actually going to see it. I don't know why. I've checked. It's not blocked, but apparently it just goes to spam. So it's like that just adds another layer because then you have all of these people that never check their junk, even though they're expecting an email from you, which is so frustrating. But it's like, well, what about using text or WhatsApp? You know, so many people love using that.
Why
are we complicating it? But then, oh, well, that doesn't plug into the applicant tracking system, so you can't record the notes. And this is when you start getting this friction between, oh, hey, recruiters and another department. So it's, yeah, we need a little plug-in for that. Yeah, so I get it. It's complicated. But there's much we can do. Work in progress.
and doesn't the this whole scenario get a little more complicated now with, of course, you know, many companies widening their talent pool by not just looking at a 20-kilometer radius of their office, but now many companies are saying, hey, we could be hiring from outside the country that we are in. And that just opens up another set of challenges, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is where it really comes back to, hey, HR business partners, could you please step up and really get to the bottom of what's going on with your hiring managers or your managers, whichever you want to call it? Do they need some training and support? Because they need to be leading, not managing. Big difference. They know they can't be micromanaging. And if you are one of those companies that has put that software on your computers that monitor if people are sitting at their desk, you're going to lose your staff.
That is an altogether different conversation.
I know, but it's part of it, right? So if you're a hiring manager who's all about presenteeism and you're insecure in your ability to manage, lead, I'd rather you were leading, you need to have a really good, hard look at yourself and get help. There is so much help out there. There is no shame in asking and being vulnerable and saying, I don't know what I'm doing. And actually, it was really interesting. When I started the hiring manager perspective, I just wanted to hear their perspective on recruitment, right? I didn't know what would happen. All of the hiring leaders I have spoken to have all expressed vulnerability. They're all happy to say, I didn't know what I was doing. I've learnt. And I just feel we need a little bit more of that. A little bit like I've never managed a team that's remote, stroke, flexible, comes in the office sometimes, doing the best I can. What do you need from me, employee, contractor, freelancer? What do you need from me? How can I be? How will it make it better for you? And then I need this from you, you know, better lines of communication. So I feel that there's a little bit, the pandemic's forced us upon it, but at the same time, it's still a little bit the cart is ahead of the horse. That's such an old-fashioned expression. Hopefully it translates to these young kids who don't know what I'm talking about. So we've got a little ask about face, and it's, do we need to offer training? Do we need to offer some support to make our leaders better, which is only going to help the company? But I'm hearing horror stories. I'm hearing of companies who have become 50% more productive and have actually grown. The bottom line is like totally improved by having all of their teams remote, and they're insisting that everyone go back into the office. And you're just like,
makes no sense at all.
Sorry, what? Yeah. Because they're not, there's insecure in their leadership.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we're all human. We came onto this planet knowing nothing. We have all learnt, and it's tough to lead. I choose not to have a team because it just doesn't suit me to do that. I've learnt that about myself. Some leaders have got teams and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. But they need to just seek help. There's so much help. There are books, there are podcasts, there are people. Let's get a coach. But it's time. So if you're going to go and enjoy the fact that the world is now open and that you can have people wherever, you need to up your leadership skills to match it.
Yeah. So, you know what? You bring that rant. Up.
No.
I mean, talking about, you know, training for leadership and, you know, younger managers.
Yeah.
And this is a question that I consistently ask almost on all my episodes all the podcast episodes.
Yeah.
Is because this is something that I have personally struggled with.
Yeah.
Because you're not literally, but you are sort of pushed into being a manager overnight. Go from, you know, one day you are just one person, individual contributor, maybe working with one more person on something, and that person is working in silo, in isolation. And then over the next 6 months, you get to hire like eight or 10 people because the business is growing. And now you're automatically considered to be a manager leader. And yeah, there is no training. I mean, maybe in some of the bigger organizations there is. But I don't think most startups or small businesses have the luxury of doing a manager training.
I'm not even sure the big companies do it either. Oh, he's a fantastic engineer. Let's promote him and make him a manager. Actually, my fabulous friend Sue Ingram did a Disrupt HR London talk about this. And she basically said, promote people and they die. And it was hilarious. It's like a 5-minute talk. But she talks about the fact we do that. We put them into a manager role and we don't support them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just think I can literally feel myself having a team, asking somebody to do something and them not doing it and me not knowing how to handle that situation. Because I would just want to scream at them and say, I asked you to do something. Why haven't you done it? Because I know I don't have the management skills to understand how to communicate that basic thing. So I've always known that about myself and said, no, I'm not managing. I'm never managing. I'm never having a team, right? I'm going to have this one person company my whole life, right? With outside support, but never managing. And that's what I do. But, you know, others would know how to handle that situation. But I just think it's that those basics. But also it's like, well, what are you going to let go of as well as that individual contributor to have that team? And are you wanting to do that? You might want to do that. It's complicated. But I just think there needs to be a lot more of it and a lot more coaching.
Yeah. Coaching
is a lot more impactful as well. I think all leaders should have coaches. I love my coach. He always, every month we meet and I sometimes never know what we're going to talk about or blast through, but there was always something amazing that comes out of the conversation where I'm getting in my own way. And he just goes, so let's just move you back out of your own way. It's just brilliant.
So. I agree. I've had a long time mentor myself. Mostly, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a coach for me to help manage people better, but that's more on the, you know, skill side of things. As I'm a marketer, so this is a person who has got, 20 years of experience in marketing. So I reach out to him continually in trying to not learn the skills per se, because, you know, platforms change and all of that change. But at the heart of it, marketing is still what it is, right?
Yeah.
It was 50 years ago or 60 years ago. It's about people, like you said.
And getting their attention and holding their attention.
Exactly.
Getting them to do something. Yeah.
Yeah. And every time we have this conversation, something new comes up.
Yeah.
I get to learn something. Yeah. Yeah. But it's maybe not as easy. Like, how do you go about finding these mentors, these coaches?
Coaches is easy because it's professional. With mentors. So I mentor a few people. And I've learned more from them than I thought I would, which is really interesting because, like, you know, you think, oh, well, you mentee, what are you going to learn? And you do. But it's about the approach. And I think it's, you've got to be very careful when you approach someone to be your mentor, is to actually explain your expectation. Like, I would love to have an hour with you once a month. The reason I've chosen you is this. I'd like to grow in this way. This is my commitment to you. And let them decide and let them feel like they can say no as well. Because, you know, a lot of the people that people choose are really, really busy.
Yeah.
You know, they've worked really hard to build their career and therefore they may not have an hour a month. But I think if you're really clear about what you would like to get from it and let them decide. But it has to be a really good match as well.
Okay.
So that, you know, the people that I've got, they're a really good match. And it feels really right to me to work with them. But mentoring is quite different. So with mentoring, I can totally give my opinion. Whereas when you're being coached, they're asking you questions to get you to get out of your own way and come up with the answer.
Okay.
It's very different. Roderick Lambert will never give me his opinion unless I actually say, actually, can I have your opinion? Because I know his background is in my field, like HR, talent acquisition. So I'm quite happy to ask him for his opinion every so often. But most of the time he's really, really listening to me and asking me the right questions. Or he'll say, do you know you've just said this three times? And I'm like, no, I didn't know. But I'm actually saying something over and over in a pattern. And he'll hear that because he's trained to hear it. So they're quite different things. So a mentor isn't necessarily trained. And they're certainly not necessarily paid, whereas coaches are always paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well. And I've had coaches, like I've had a life coach for my childhood trauma, and this is a business coach for my business as well. So there's different coaches for different areas as well. So, but I can't recommend almost both, actually. But I definitely think that all leaders, all companies should invest in their leaders with coaches because of the fact it will just transform the company and more productive company. Well, happier people, more productive company.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that makes sense. Before we close this off, Katrina,
I know. I think we've gone over the 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's
everyone's falling asleep at this point, reaching for more coffee.
Before we close this off, you've spoken about how you have these coaches, and what I was going to ask is, which I typically ask all guests, is tools of your trade, and in your case, of course. You're not the biggest fan of,
love technology. Oh, don't give me the wrong. See, this is the thing. I write a book called The Robot Proof Recruiter and people think I hate technology. I hate the misuse of technology. Recruitment spam. I hate laziness. Oh my gosh. Tools of my trade. This Zoom. I love Zoom. Zoom has the best backgrounds. There is so much mess behind me that you can't see. I love the fact that I don't have to wear any makeup. No, all right. Beauty light. No, I'm kidding. Right. What are the tools of my trade? Really seriously good microphone from podcasting, clearly. I also use Mural, although there's also Miro for my facilitation. Yeah. So I love that. Mural and Miro, the whiteboards.
Whiteboarding tool, yeah.
I'm an avid social media user. Obviously, I've built my entire business around that. I was teaching social recruiting for many years, which is all using that. And I think it's really understanding how amazing that can be for, engaging. But I would say the biggest tool in my kit bag is my network. So this incredible network of past clients, friends, supporters, all the people I've met at conferences, it's that network.
Yeah.
That I literally know if I come across a problem, I can go, I don't know the answer to that, or I'm the wrong person, go to this person.
Yeah.
And, or I've got a question, I can go to them. And it's that, build a network. Like if you really want to succeed in this world, build a network, and don't build a network that is all about you take. It's not give, just give. Unconditionally give. And then your network will completely support you and you'll go places you never expected to. I have literally traveled this planet. I've spoken on 5 continents and I was so going to get the 6th until the pandemic hit. I was booked in South America to speak. I'm so irritated by that. But anyway, it's just postponed. It'll happen. But I've got to speak all around the world. I'd work with clients all around the world because I built this incredible network because I was giving. And I think that it can be hard for recruiters. It's natural for marketers to put posts out that are quite giving. And I think recruiters are so direct, like, I've got a job, come work for me. It's like, no, don't. Share useful information for your network and build your network. So use the technology and the tools available to you to do that. Whatever it is, video, audio, social, doesn't matter. But yes, avid user, I would be lost without my phone. I do not go anywhere without my phone. So
people can reach out to you on LinkedIn.
I'm dreadful. I'm like the first 10 pages of Google. I have to really behave myself. Speaking of reputations, yes, absolutely LinkedIn. And tell me that you heard me here as well, because it's always nice to go, oh, I heard you on that podcast.
Yeah,
it helps. I love that. So yeah, LinkedIn, more than happy to connect with people. But tell me why. Don't send me an unexplained invite to connect.
Yeah.
I don't like those.
fantastic conversation, Katrina. Thank you so much for coming on the Shape of Work podcast.
Can I just add a little point? The Robot Proof Recruiter, my wonderful book. I donated the royalties from the Robot Proof Recruiter to the most extraordinary charity called Hope for Justice, which aims to end modern day slavery, impacting over 40 million people. And they're struggling at the moment, like every charity is. So please purchase a copy of this amazing book, improve your recruitment, and help save somebody, please. And tell everyone.
Definitely.
Buy copies for your entire team. Yeah.
You know,
so
you
it's,
know,
it's on Kindle and everything. So
fantastic. You know what? We'll put the link for the book in the description of the podcast as well.
Thank you.
But again, you know, thank you so much for taking the time out. Really grateful to have you on The Shape of Work.
Yeah, thank you.